Good evening to each one gathered out this evening. Perhaps I'll begin with a question, that is, are you alive tonight? Now, maybe that's a strange question, but are you alive? I mean, maybe you took a deep breath just to check. Do you have feeling? I know whenever we added to the church here, it was actually, in some ways, the move to the front bench, three benches up, is a blessing because I have feelings. And I'm not quite as close to that ceiling cassette anymore. So that helps me to know when I sit here I'm alive because I have the feeling. We have smelling and different senses we have, and that's how we know we're alive, right? So what is it that keeps us alive? And as I pondered that for a minute, you know, what keeps me alive is it God? God's the one that makes that heart just keep thumping and keep thumping and keep thumping, keep pumping the blood to the brain. God's the one that makes that lungs take in another breath. So it's God. God's what keeps us alive. Or is it? So tonight I was thinking about life, physical life, and I was thinking about spiritual life. Of course, that's what we're thinking about tonight, is spiritual life. There's a lot of similarities between spiritual life and physical life. And that is, tonight, God has done his part. He's pumping, he's making your heart pump. He's making you take a breath. But if you quit eating, it would only be a matter of time, and you would die. So it's your choice, it's our choice as humans, that we take in nourishment, take in bread, take in water. And that's what keeps us going. I did a little research on Traditions Health website. Now, you know I wouldn't spend a lot of time on a health website, but I did look because I wondered what the signs of dying were. Because, you know, it's what are signs of somebody's dying? And it listed three stages of dying: early stage, middle stage, and last stage. And it said this: that in early stage of dying, patients will begin eating and drinking remarkably less. And I thought, interesting. Eating becomes more of a burden than a joy. And I thought, is that the same spiritually? Once the appetite for God's word, the appetite for spiritual things becomes less, it's no longer a joy, it's a chore. Is that the early stages of dying? I think it would be. In the middle stage of dying, it has that the physical appearance changes. And people become less and less responsive to their surroundings and those around them. And again, I thought about the similarity between the physical and the spiritual, and that is that those who find themselves walking away from Christ, their appearance changes. Those who once knew the Lord and walk away, their appearance changes. It changes. And they become less and less responsive, I'm going to say, to truth. It has an effect on them. And we know at the end, they die. Now tonight, I'm not aware that anyone here is dying physically. But in reality, in the early stage of dying, you really can't tell just by looking at someone, unless you really know them well. But if somebody was dying physically in this audience, I know we're all dying. We're all headed that direction, but generally most of the older people in this audience are getting bigger in the middle. It's not from lack of eating. But we are all dying, but nobody's dying at that accelerated rate because of not eating. But not from a physical sense, I do ask you that question, and ask myself that question, am I in the early stages? And if we are in the early stages, there's hope because you can pick your appetite back up and go again. And I thought about, we was up at Pine Creek the other Sunday, and coming home, there was power lines running along the road, and this is a really good illustration, but I couldn't help but think about it. And there was telephone poles. Of course, there was two wires. I looked at those telephone poles, almost like two hands hanging out. They were hanging on those power lines, and there was pole after pole hanging on the power lines. Now, in that case, they were holding the lines up, but I'm going to use in this scenario that they were getting life from the line. Okay, And there was a couple of poles that were broke off. And they were still hanging on, but they were just like sagged way down and pulling that line down. I thought about thought about spiritually. Sometimes we're strong, you know, we're standing there and our arms are up and we're full. And then sometimes we hit them spots in life where everything feels broken and you're just hanging on. But don't let go, because if you let go, you'll just crash to the ground. But there's poles, some of those poles are broke off at midpoint, and they were just hanging on the line, swinging in midair. So tonight, if you feel like you're broken off, hang on. For message tonight, I'd like to turn to John chapter 6. And I titled it, Am I Alive Spiritually? And I thought about only touching the end of this chapter, but I think I'm going to take a couple points out of the entire chapter. But Brother Evan already mentioned that it is important that we think about this ahead of communion, because if you go back, and you don't have to turn to Corinthians, we'll probably read it on Sunday morning. But in 1 Corinthians 11, it talks about when you take communion, this is what you do. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you do show. And so that means that when we take communion on Sunday, and we come up and we get bread and we get the drink, that we are showing, and that show word there means that we are declaring, we are preaching, we are speaking of and teaching that Christ died for me. And so if we aren't alive spiritually, then he says that if you do this unworthily, if you do this and you're dead spiritually, then you're just bringing damnation, not to the body, but you bring it to yourself. And so it's important that we evaluate tonight and think about, where am I? Am I in the early stages of death? There's still hope, but if I completely died, then communion would be out of place. It'd bring damnation. That's what Jesus says. That's what Paul said. So in John chapter 6, and I'm just going to, I thought about reading the chapter, but for sake of time, I'm not going to read the chapter. We know John chapter 6. It's a beautiful chapter. All of John's, I love the book of John, and I tell new believers that's what you should read. Read the book of John. It's full of stories about Jesus and what he did and what he can do. So we have here in the first couple of verses, we have Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, and we have this great multitude of people following him. And who wouldn't have followed him back then? I thought about if Jesus was on earth today, I mean, I can just see it. There would be lots of people following him, because everyone wants to see that, the next move. I mean, the next trick. It wasn't a trick, it was miracles. But that's what people were following Jesus. And he had this whole multitude following him, and his disciples were with him. And down here in verse 5, Jesus saw all these people, and lifted up his eyes, saw a great company coming to him, and he saith unto Philip, when shall we buy bread that these may eat? And this he said to prove him, for he knew what he would do. So we have his disciples following him, and he looks at Philip and says, where can we buy food to feed all these people? And I had to wonder, why did he ask Philip that? I mean, Jesus did have to prove him. He wanted to see what Philip was made of. He wanted to see if Philip had an answer. And tonight, the first point I have here from these verses 5 to 11, Jesus has the answers to life's impossibilities. He really does. Jesus already knew, before he asked Philip this question, he already knew what he was going to do, but he just wanted to see what Philip had to say. And I think sometimes in life that Jesus presents us with some rare and seemingly unique and seemingly impossible circumstances just to prove us. That's what he did to Philip. And what is that response? I mean, Philip's response was, Lord, I mean, 200 pennies worth of bread, and if you think about in today's market, just say 5,000 people and $25,000, $5 a meal, $25,000, which what it would take to feed these people. Who standing in this crowd has $25,000? That's what it would take to feed these people. And then the fact is, in our modern times, I don't even think I could go down the street anywhere and buy that much food and feed that many people just from one stop shop in town. I don't think it would work. And so Philip's looking at Jesus and saying, This is impossible. But Jesus had another plan. Second thing I have is Jesus can use whatever we have to offer, no matter how small it is. And we have Simon Peter's brother said to him, here's a lad here with 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes. But what are they among so many? And Jesus said, well, make the men sit down. And I thought about ourselves. Many times in life's seemingly impossible circumstances, we look around and say, man, there's no way we can. Well, Jesus isn't asking us to fix the problem. He's just saying, I'll take whatever you have to give me, and I can use it. So nothing in life, we sometimes get this idea that some things are just too big and we don't know how to handle it, so we just aren't going to do anything. Well, if you have something, Jesus says, offer it to me and I'll take care of the problem. That's what he did here. He took what that little boy had. He took what Andrew says here. Here's a lad. And Jesus said, well, make people sit down. And he took that and he broke it out. Doesn't matter how much you have. It's how willing man are to give it. That's what Jesus is looking for. And the third thing I have in verses 12 and 13, and that is don't waste what Jesus multiplied. And I find it interesting here, of course, we knew that they had 12 baskets left over of these fragments. Jesus says, go around and pick it up. Don't let it go to waste. And we see a lot of food waste in our culture. And I'm especially mindful of it at Bible Discovery. Go in there and some ladies from this congregation bring some really, I think, really good cookies or whatever it is, and I'm there kind of wishing I could eat some, and they're handing them out to these students. The next thing you know, they're throwing them in the trash. And what a wasteful life. That's what we find ourselves in. But here Jesus says, pick it up. I multiplied it. I gave you opportunity. Don't waste it. And that's what we're all here tonight. We have opportunities, but we have opportunities here. We have opportunities in life. It maybe comes maturely, maybe comes with talents, maybe you have gifts. But whatever it is, don't waste it. Because everything we have is God's. We're simply stewards. And we can't lay our finger on anything and say, well, this is mine, because it's not. We need to keep that in mind. Don't waste it. Even if you have extra of a talent that find some place to put it to use. Then we have here in verse 14 to 16, we have these men, once they saw the miracle that Jesus did, they said, this is of a truth that this prophet that should come into the world. When Jesus therefore perceived they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he just left. He's like, I'm not in for the earthly glory. And he disappeared. As I thought about that, I thought about how that earthly fame generally ruins men that are living. Most men cannot handle that earthly fame. Sometimes I think it's in us. We like to maybe be famous, maybe be somebody. But humility is what it takes to have true life. Jesus taught that. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven, he said in Matthew 5, verse 3. And that's what he wants from us. He wants us, in order to be filled and alive, we need to be humble. And Jesus was a perfect example of that throughout his whole ministry here on earth. Next thing I have, and that is in verse 16 to 21, we have, without Jesus, the storms of life only bring fear. And I talked about that a little bit in my devotions on Sunday, but we have, of course, these disciples. Jesus went away, and the disciples, they came down to the sea, and it says in verse 17, entered into a ship, and it was now dark, and Jesus was not coming to them. And I wondered if they kind of expected Jesus to join them. It just seems like when I read that, I thought, the disciples went down in the ship, and I have to wonder if pretty often Jesus went with them. It just says, and Jesus was not come to them. And so they started to row across the sea. As they started to row across this sea, this tremendous wind came up and started to blow, and the ship started to rock, and it says they went 25 to 30 furlongs, which is 3 to 4 miles. And they see Jesus walking. They didn't know who it was. It was Sunday on this sea, on in the middle of this storm. They were also very fearful because of the winds, and they see this being out there, and they were scared. And Jesus said unto them, It is I, be not afraid. Without Jesus, storms bring fear. And that's what happened to these men. As they sat there in that ship, those storms. But it says, when they realized it was Jesus, they willingly received him into the ship. And guess what? The storm was over. And then it said, then besides that, immediately they were on the other side. So that is what Jesus can do for us. If we're alive and we have a connection to Jesus, then the storms of life won't be as big. They will pass over. And then we have in verses 22, down to verse 65. And maybe I'll just read this part, because this is kind of the part of that I wanted to take a few more thoughts out of. The day following, when the people were stood on the other side of the sea, saw that there was no other boat there, save the one whereinto the disciples were entered, and that Jesus went not with his disciples into the boat, but the disciples were gone away alone. Howbeit there came other boats from Tiberias nigh unto the place where they did eat bread, after that Jesus had given thanks. When the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there, neither his disciples, they also took shipping and came to Capernaum seeking for Jesus. When they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said unto him, Rabbi, when camest thou hither? Jesus answered them and said, Verily, verily, I say unto you, ye seek me not because ye saw the miracles, but because ye did eat the loaves and were filled. Labor not for meat which perisheth, but for the meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of man shall give unto you, for him hath the Father sealed. Then said they unto him, What shall we do, that we may work the works of God? Jesus answered and said unto them, This is the work of God, that ye believe on him whom he has sent. They said therefore unto him, What sign showest thou then, that we may see and believe thee? What doest thou work? What dost thou work? Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written, He gave them bread from heaven to eat. Then Jesus said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world. Then said they unto him, Lord, evermore give us this bread. Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. But I said unto you, that ye also have seen me and believe not. All that the Father giveth me shall come to me, and him that cometh to me I will in no wise cast out. For I came down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will which has sent me, that of all which he hath given me I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day. And this is the will of him that sent me, that everyone which seeth the Son and believeth on him may have everlasting life. And I will raise him up at the last day. The Jews then murmured at him because he said, I am the bread which came down from heaven. And they said, Is not this Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How is it then that he saith, I came down from heaven? Jesus therefore answered and said unto them, Murmur not among yourselves. No man can come to me except the Father which has sent me draw him, and I will raise him up at the last day. It is written in the prophets, And they shall be all taught of God. Every man, therefore, that hath heard and hath learned of the Father cometh unto me. Not that any man hath seen the Father, save he which is of God. He hath seen the Father. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me hath everlasting life. I am that bread of life. Your fathers did eat manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread which cometh down from heaven, that a man may eat thereof and not die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. The Jews therefore strove among themselves, saying, How can this man give us flesh to eat? Then Jesus said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, except ye eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, ye have no life in you. Whoso eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood hath eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. For my flesh is meat indeed, and my blood is drink indeed. He that eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood dwelleth in me, and I in him. As the living Father has sent me, and I live by the Father, so he that eateth me, even he shall live by me. This is the bread which came down from heaven, not as your fathers did eat manna and are dead. He that eateth of this bread shall live forevermore. These things said he in the synagogue as he taught in Capernaum. Many therefore of his disciples, when they heard this, said, This is a hard saying, who can hear it? When Jesus knew in himself that his disciples murmured at it, he said unto them, Does this offend you? What? And if ye shall see the Son of Man ascend up where he was before, it is a spirit that quickeneth. The flesh profiteth nothing. The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit and they are life. But there are some of you that believe not. For Jesus knew from the beginning who they were that believed not, and who should betray him. And he said, Therefore said I unto you, that no man can come unto me, except that were given unto him of my Father. So here we have this multitude of people. After they had been fed, they went down to the sea, and the disciples were already gone, but there was other ships, and they got on these ships and went across, and they found Jesus. And Jesus knew their hearts. And he says in verse 26, kind of putting it in my own words, he said, You came because you were fed. You came because it was convenient. I mean, listen to Jesus and enjoy free food. That's what they came for. The point I have here is following Jesus because of convenience will only bring temporary life. And that's what these men did. They came for Jesus because he'd fed them food, but they didn't understand that believing in him is where they would have the true food and it would have eternal life. Jesus was basically saying, don't follow me because it's a popular thing. Don't follow me because it's convenient or someday you'll be disappointed. If the only reason we're following Jesus tonight, if the only reason we followed Jesus over the last number of years of our life was because it was convenient and because it was easy, I can assure you sometime it's going to get tough. And not everything in life is going to be smooth. Most of us here of any age knows what it's like to hit those tough spots, and it shakes you. And you have to think, now was I living on the real bread of life? Or was I simply following Jesus because of the convenience? Tonight, are you alive? And it says further on, what happened to these people? We went down in verse 66, didn't read that verse, but the people that were following him simply for this reason, when they got to that tough spot, when they got to that hard spot, it says, then they no longer followed him. They walked away. Sixth thing I have here, or maybe my points are messed up. I'm not sure. I might have skipped one or two, but everlasting life comes from believing in Jesus, and we have that in verse 40 and verse 47. And this is the will of him that sent me, that everyone which seeth the Son and believeth on him may have everlasting life. Tonight you believe in Jesus. Recently I told someone that's all you really have to do, and it's like it's simple. I said it is simple. Believe in Jesus. Verse 47, Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me shall have everlasting life. Back in John chapter 3, Jesus said this, And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish. And I remember as a young child looking at that Bible story book of that snake on serpent on that pole and thinking, and you saw people look like they were dying around on the ground, a couple people looking at that, and thinking, why would everybody look up there? It's not hard. Just look at the snake on the pole. And that's, believe in Jesus. That's what Jesus was teaching here. You have to believe. And then you have to, when you believe in Jesus, then you'll partake of him. And he'll be that meat, and he'll be that thirst quencher. Tonight, do you believe in Jesus? Are you alive? Do you believe in Jesus? Next point. Because Jesus is the bread of life and the living bread. And it's interesting, if you ever search for that in any of the other Gospels, no other Gospel that Aquafine mentions this. This is the only gospel where it talks about Jesus being the bread of life and Jesus being the living bread. Verse 35, we have it. I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. It's all fulfilling. Those who eat of natural bread will simply get hungry and a few hours later again be searching for more. But whoever comes to Jesus and partakes of Jesus, it is all sufficient. No more searching for fulfillment. No more searching for a reason to live. No more searching for something to fill the void that's in your life. If you have Jesus and you're alive spiritually, he will fill you. And you can just be satisfied with that and feel full. It's possible. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. Verse 48, I am the bread of life. Your fathers that eat manna in the wilderness and are dead. He says this is different than the bread that came down from heaven. There's people in the wilderness, they ate that bread and they died. But Jesus says, if you partake of me, I'm living bread. And you will live eternally. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. This is the bread, verse 58. This is the bread which came down from heaven, not as your fathers that eat manna and are dead. But he that eateth of this bread shall live forever. And my question to you tonight is, are you alive? Are you partaking of that bread? Are you partaking of that fulfillment that can satisfy you forever? Tonight, are you eating and drinking of the body of Christ? Are you allowing Christ to fill you? Are you allowing him to have his way in your life, in my life? Are we living for him? Or are we still searching for fulfillment? Are you still searching for something that will satisfy? There's nothing out there. There's a song, there's nothing out there that'll take that place. Nothing. Sunday morning when we take the bread and the cup, where we declare, where we show and declare that Jesus died for me and I'm alive spiritually. I believe in him. I'm feasting on it. I'm partaking of his flesh and his blood. I'm satisfied through eternity. And we have these sad words in verse 66. From that time, many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him. Have this whole massive crowd of people, and suddenly they realized, and Jesus did, it says earlier in the chapter, it was hard to understand, and Jesus was speaking hard things. We have this whole group of people, many, many people, and many of them walked away. It was no longer popular to follow Jesus. It was no more convenient. It was no more as satisfying because they weren't believing on him. They were simply following him because of the works they saw him doing. And Jesus looked at the 12, and he says to them, and I guess they went from 5,000 to 12, I guess. And Jesus looked at them and said, will you also go away? And we have Peter's testimony. And I hope this is a testimony of each one here tonight. Lord, to whom should we go? Where else would we go? And that's my heart cry tonight, and that is, there is nowhere else to go. Jesus will meet your needs. Thou hast the words of the eternal life, and we believe and are sure that thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. Is that your testimony tonight?